Anybody, anywhere,
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command with Logan Paulson, who spent a decade in the NFL. I'm Grant Paulson. You can listen to me on 106.7 The Fan each and every day from 2 to 6.30. Another week, another batch of OTA workouts, and another session in front of the media for observations to be made. Logan, we are one step closer to the regular season, and you are back out at the practice field this week.
Oh, yeah. And, dude, this is such a fun time of year. I think I've said this before, man. I just love seeing the guys on the grass, man. I just, something about it. Like, I was joking with Fred. Like, we had, we did a segment on the field, and we had to walk up to the studio. And, like, I just couldn't stop watching. And I don't know. And he's like, you're addicted to football. And my wife has said the same thing to me. And I'm like, you know, I guess there's worse things to be addicted to. But just something about seeing the best people in the world do their thing. You know, it's only twice every other, it's once a week, but, like, it's just cool. It's just cool to see the process, cool to see the speed. I was talking to one of my buddies, and it's like, you know, one of the things after you do all the draft stuff is you forget, like, what the best of the best look like. You forget how Terry comes out of a route. You forget how, you know, Cosme looks on a punch in a pass set. Like, you know what I mean? You just forget how good these guys are, and it's just a fun reminder.
I can see you being dragged away to go do the work with the Commanders broadcast crew, like a kid gets dragged out of a birthday party at like a flight zone or something.
That's kind of how it is. And I feel bad because, like, you know, Fred had something he had to do and we're trying to rush the schedule, and I'm just kind of like trying to drag my feet as we get up to this, to the studio, so I can just watch one more play, one more rep, one more thing. So you know, it's just one of those you know, I just like it. I just like thinking about it, like talking about it. So I'm in a good line of work, I guess.
Yes, you are. So I know that it's the same head coach in Dan Quinn. This is not a new staff, but you do have a new offensive coordinator in David Blau and a new defensive coordinator in Durante Jones. So I wanted to talk practice structure and any observations you may have early on differences, some of the things they're working here in OTAs that caught your attention.
Yeah, I think the main thing is I love when you get back to football and, like, the main thing stays the main thing. So, like, they want to be about producing the ball. And so, like, the defense every day when we start practice, we're talking about producing the ball, whether that's interceptions, whether that's punching the football out. And I know people do variations of that, but I love the level of detail that they coach it with, like seeing the defensive back coach, like talking about the angle of the punch and the position of the ball and all that kind of stuff. Like, it just gets me juiced up, you know? And I think about offensively, like, if it's about the ball, like, they do a ball protection, ball security circuit where we've got the offensive lineman going on the ground. And that's, like, the same type of thing I did when I was in college. It's the same type of thing I did when I was with Dan in Atlanta. But I love that kind of thought process, like, just to get the boys thinking about it. And again, you just got to constantly emphasize that. If that's the core tenet of your program, you got to emphasize it. And then obviously, like, I do think, like, you know, the receiver coach is the same. Like, so there's a lot of continuity there in terms of the types of drills that they're doing, which is a lot of fun. Like, and it's so interesting. Like, I coach receivers. I have a couple, like, high school receivers that I coach. And one of the points of feedback I get from, like, dads and these guys is like, hey, like, are we going to do any of that, like, route, like, you know, double stick, like, Instagram stuff? And when I go to any NFL practice, like, there's none of that in the drill work, right? It's like, we're going to work stems, we're going to work angles, we're going to work breakdowns. And just to see the, like, these guys who are the best in the world at what they do work the route from that kind of perspective, I think is awesome. Like, just like, we can always kind of add and put flowers on this thing, but at some point, like, the basics of the concept are just so fun to see those receivers kind of hit on every single day. So
Joe Witt's axiom was ball is life. And they did a lot of that, yeah, get the ball out stuff in practice, and it just didn't translate to games. Is it noticeably different, or are the drills different? Because they're not the first team to want to try to force takeaways. It is going to be more of an emphasis because last year was such a dud in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about the pre-snap, like the pre-practice stuff. I like it because it kind of gets the boys lathered up. We're thinking about the football. We're working on tackling. Like, all that stuff is super important. But I do think that to get turnovers, the more I think about this, the more I read about it, the more I research it, the more film I watch on it, it's really going to be the execution of the scheme and how you affect the quarterback. Like one of the stats you brought up on last show, which I loved, and I did a little bit of a follow-up on, was Minnesota like led the league in fumble recoveries or something like that, some stat like that. And when you go back and watch the fumbles, it's not like guys are like punching the football out. It's like the quarterback's getting hit when the ball is in an exposed position. And so if you can get pressure on the quarterback and disrupt his vision and disrupt his timing and get that ball out, like there's an opportunity for you to kind of take this axiom of the ball is life, all this drill work that you've done, but also get it elevated by the scheme. And I think that's the thing when I look at it, I'm like, yes, this is a piece of like making it at the forefront of thought here in terms of turning the football over. But really, like, you know, if we're looking at the Brian Flores defense, the all-out pressure, the disguises are the things that make that ball come to life. And when you look at Dan Quinn when he was in Dallas, it wasn't necessarily you had these great defensive backs who were always ball hunting and always punching the ball out. It's like you had Micah Parsons and a really diverse pressure package that was forcing the quarterbacks into uncomfortable throwing positions. So I think it's a great point. Like you can talk about punching the ball out, doing all that stuff, but really the thing that's going to make it come to life is some of that stuff you see from Flores, some of that stuff you see from Quinn, some of that stuff you see from the Legion of Boom back in the day, that, you know, the old Baltimore Ravens, those teams that produce the football at a high level, they affect the passer at a high level. So again, as we get through OTA's mini camp, I want to see that come to life. But, you know, in the meantime, like I think it's good that they talk about it and it is a point of emphasis.
Yeah, you kind of led me right where I was going to go, because that's what I was going to tee up next is those turnovers are going to have to come from the scheme, and they're going to have to come, frankly, from the pressures that they generate and making quarterbacks uncomfortable. I still like the drill work. All you can do right now is all you can do, right? So like that should be an emphasis today and tomorrow and all of training camp and every practice all week long, because if you don't live it, you're not going to play it, right? I mean, it's got to be a lifestyle thing, and it's got to be front of mind at all times. And I just think a lot of teams can do that part. That's the controllable part. The harder part is the scheme-based stuff when you're bringing guys from all over the place and, you know, you're in some kind of zero look and it's a race to the quarterback. And it's not just the hits that lead to the ball coming out. It's forcing him off his mark, and now he's resetting and he thinks he sees something, but he didn't see that there's actually a defender zoning that way. Like those types of plays are what are going to have to get them the takeaways that have eluded them for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. Like, so there's been two turnovers in the practices that I've watched, right? Two interceptions, and both of them have come off of pressure. Now, it wasn't like a blitz or anything, but it's like a four-man pressure. Like that's one thing that another thing that kind of jumped out to me after the last OTA was like the four-man rush stuff that they were doing was really, I mean, you just got horses in there now. You know what I mean? Adafe Oweh's ability to compress a pocket. And then you see Jaden Daniels try to step up, but the pocket's getting squeezed from all angles, which this is not an indictment of the offensive line. That stuff happens all the time in OTAs. And one of the reasons it happens is because usually those guys got big, bulky football pads on, shoulder pads on. Now they got the soft shell foam stuff. So like when the offensive line goes to punch, there's not like a rigid structure. So it's pretty loose. So if I'm a pass rusher in OTAs, I better look good. But anyway, so they're compressing the pocket. Jaden steps up and tries to kind of level a throw over the rush, and it gets a little bit too much air and it kind of falls right in the lap of a DB. And again, like that's not Jaden's fault, but it's the rush, it's the pressure, it's the stuff you just described. Like I got to get off the spot. I got to try to get up nice and tall, make this throw. I don't quite have enough on it. And that to me is the scheme. That's guys winning one-on-ones. And the other element there is guys in the defensive backfield playing assignment sound with good vision of the quarterback. And I think that's something that we're starting to see here from the Durante Jones defense is kind of the coaching and the detail. And again, it's the fourth practice, so there's a lot of work still left to do. But I like what I've seen from them in that regard.
Another thing that I've noticed in terms of OTA observations that I've seen people making, the rookie class is pushed down the depth chart a little bit. So you've got Sonny Styles right now watching Frankie Louvu and Leo Chenal a lot. You've got Antonio Williams doing a little bit less than I would have anticipated in terms of the opportunities at Z opposite Terry McLaurin, which I think you and I, a couple weeks after the draft, were suggesting that's where this could end, is him basically being their de facto number two wide receiver. How much of that is making these guys earn everything, and how much of it is where they're actually at right now compared to other players on the team?
It's a great question, and it's one that they probably I don't have a good answer to, but it's one that they have an answer to in the building. Like, I think when it's all said and done, I'm assuming that Sonny Styles is going to start at Mike linebacker or kind of one of those other internal, whatever they call that. You know, like you have your Sam on the ball, you have your Mike. Some people call it the Jack. Some people call it the Will. And then they have your on ball kind of weak side linebacker there. I think he's going to start at one of those two interior spots, quite honestly. But, you know, athletically, psychologically, it all seems to fit that he's going to be the starter. But I guess there is something to kind of saying, we're not going to give you anything. Like, we want to see you put the work in, study, make sure you understand this, make sure you can handle kind of the differences between college and the NFL. But ultimately, I think week one, I think I would assume Sonny Styles is going to be a starter at one of those internal spots. And I would also assume that Antonio Williams, at a minimum, is starting at the F spot. So kind of that slot receiver role. And in the best case scenario, he's probably starting at like the Z wide receiver spot opposite Terry. But again, I think it's important to kind of, for us as fans and for us as analysts, to remember the difference between college and the NFL, the speed, the playbook. I think that's another one too that people forget about. Now, Sonny Styles is a little bit different because he was in this Matt Patricia defense at Ohio State. So it was pretty complicated, but there usually is a pretty significant jump for offensive players to NFL verbiage and for defensive players in terms of NFL concept, because NFL offenses are so much more complicated.
But you generally, it sounds like that or agree with the idea of making them, because my philosophy would be, if I know, then do it. Like, let's get him every rep possible. Let's throw whatever we can at him. Let's overload him so that he can flounder a little bit in these settings, frankly, and then you're better off for it as we move forward. And I don't know if that's the case with Williams. Like, maybe he does have to earn it. Maybe he's got to show a little more because we're not convinced. But in the case of Sonny Styles, you're not taking an inside linebacker in the top 10 that's as talented as him and then having him not start. So I would be more inclined, frankly, to just say, go explore the space. Let's rock and roll.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too to consider there is, I agree with that to a large extent, but also, like, I've seen young players be handed things and it not work out. You know, like, it just, like, they don't push themselves as hard as they need to. Now, I've seen young players handed things and they grab it with two hands and they run 1,000 miles an hour, and you're like, man, that guy looks like he's been in the league for 10 years. So I think there's both ways it goes, but I do think giving those young players some adversity, some kind of, maybe like limiting the stress is also important there. But again, like you said, I don't think you take a guy in the top 10 who's as talented and as gifted as Sonny Styles, not anticipating he's going to start. The other thing too is, like, Frankie and Leo are doing a good job. Like, they look good in those roles, especially on first and second down when they kind of do their team run period. Like, you know, Frankie's Frankie, man. He's going to get downhill. He's going to be aggressive. He looks much more disciplined in terms of gap fit. Leo Chenal is kind of this action figure who can really run and let it rip. So there is some good competition here. And so, like, I don't think you can, I think you're in a position where if you're like, hey, man, we don't think he's ready, you could sit him or get him in like a spot role for a couple of weeks. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think it's important to remember how talented that linebacker room is for Washington.
Yeah, probably outside of edge, the single biggest improvement they've made in a personnel group is at linebacker. That's what happens when you take one guy in the top 10, you sign another guy as a marquee free agent, and you only play two at a time for the most part, right? Now you push everybody else down the depth chart just a little bit. Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, Take Command. I'm curious, I'm putting you on the spot here, but in all your years, your 10 plus or so years in the NFL, is there a guy that stands out when you look back that was most impressive in terms of being just ready or getting everything as a rookie, where you're like, damn, this guy is on it. We don't need to dangle a carrot in front of him. Like, he's doing everything exactly how he should do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when I was talking about it earlier, like in that kind of little brief interlude, I was trying to think of, is if there anybody that fits that role. And I remember Kerrigan was pretty close to that. You know, like, I thought it wasn't like a mental thing. It was more of a physical thing. You know, like, he had to get used to kind of how big the offensive linemen were, how strong the tight end were. Like, I remember, like, it was like the third or fourth training camp practice. I remember, like, I pancaked him because he just wasn't used to kind of having to deal with a tight end that could, you know, like, was big. Like, I was 270 pounds. Like, I outweighed him by freaking 10 pounds at the time. So, and then as the training camp went on, he got used to that. You saw his technique tighten up. And he was a guy that was pretty locked in from the jump, right? Just like in terms of his routine, when he got out to the practice field, how he studied film, how he practiced. That's another thing that rookies have a hard time with, is like, you NFL practices are really cool because it's like you're basically going full speed, but everyone's a good enough athlete that they can kind of protect each other at the point of contact. And getting used to that kind of tempo and that kind of intensity is tough. And I felt like Ryan, at least to my remembrance, did a really good job of kind of handling all those adversities all the way through. And obviously was the week one starter. What was that, in 2011?
Yeah, that was your second year in the NFL. That was Ryan's rookie year when he was drafted in the top 20. All right, when we come back, I want to get into some of your observations on specific players that stood out and some things that you liked. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball as soon as we come back on Take Command. Welcome back. This is Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. OTA practice in the rear view from this past week. You made a bunch of observations, so there's some guys we wanted to call attention to. I know you were very impressed with what you saw from Terry McLaurin.
Yeah.
It's become a major storyline here, as David Blau's talking about basically feeding him the football. McLaurin has floated out there that he's been told he's going to get 10 targets a game, and he's in on that. That's a lot. I'd be surprised if he hits 170 this year, but I would sign up for it with his talent. What are you seeing from him?
You know, it's, again, it's just two practices, but, and we all know Terry's a good football player, but I think just seeing him in this style of offense, again, just reminds you of how flexible and how diverse he is as a route runner. You know, he's a little bit stiff. You know, he kind of has this very kind of, stiff running posture, but his ability to accelerate, decelerate, kind of run multiple route trees. Like, you see his experience a lot. Like, you forget, like on a dig, for example, like I rip out of this dig and I just kind of throttle just enough and the timing with the quarterback's just right where I can hit that thing, catching it going 40 miles an hour and run right through up the seam for an explosive play. He's done that a couple times in practice, right? Where it's like the timing is just right between him and Jaden. And the other thing, too, that I think has been nice to see is his leadership and how competitive the receiver group is. Because everyone's like, oh, who's the number two? What's going on? Like, that group feels different. It feels different than it did last year. It feels much more competitive, again, just in terms of how they're communicating with the defense, how they're communicating with each other, at least, you know, in the observational moments of practice. So I think Terry being as athletically juiced as he is great to see. Seeing him be as emotionally juiced as he is and seeing what it does, not only, I mean, I said for the receiver room, but really for the whole offense, it kind of gives them like this. Like, I remember last year when he wasn't there, it was kind of like, it felt a little flat. You're like, okay, you know, Terry's not here. The big dog's not here. But like, it kind of feels like he's leading the point and everybody's just super confident in what this group can be. Obviously, Jaden Daniels is the man, but having him out there has been a really nice boost and a really nice change from what it was last year.
Well, let's face it. I mean, they have to get a massive season out of Terry McLaurin for this whole thing to work. They need him to be healthier than he was last year and more productive, because the depth chart behind him, there's some guys that might be able to help them and be pretty good, but there are not really slam dunk known commodities necessarily, right? I mean, they're hoping Antonio Williams delivers. They want De'Ami Brown to play like he did in that playoff stretch, but his NFL career otherwise has been different than that over that several game sample where he was really, really good. You know, as you look at Jalen Lane or Luke McCaffrey and hoping one of those guys break out, it's kind of McLaurin as a guy you'd write in Sharpie. And then you're working with a lot of pencil or some light pen otherwise. So they need to get a huge season out of him. And it's not a coincidence, by the way. He's always been outstanding. Like, every single year he has great off seasons, great camps. He's as hard a worker as there is on the team. And then he goes out and he catches his 77 balls for 1,100 yards or whatever. Last year, he's at odds with the team. They're in that spat. He's not at practice. He ends up having soft tissue issues all year long. And it's the first time we see him not put up big numbers, 38 for 582 and 3, and the offense paid for it. So I think there's no reason to assume he's not going to be a monster this season in a new offense where they're going to involve him differently and better, I think, where I think it's a more receiver-friendly offense anyway. Like, is he going to catch 87 balls like he did in 2020? Probably not. But I would bet on him being in the 75 to 85 range. And I think there's a very good chance, Logan, that he goes for a career high in yards. You know, maybe that's 1191 is the high watermark right now, 2022. I think he'll be in the 1150, 1200 range, and I would not be shocked if he was in the low 1200s.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's utilization, but, you know, I'm always kind of like, everyone's like, oh, how's Terry doing? How's Terry doing at practice? You know, since I've been covering the team, so 4 or 5 years now. And it's always been like, yeah, he's looking good. You know, he's doing Terry stuff. But this year it feels different, feels more energetic, feels more diverse. And so I'm kind of optimistic. I'm with you in the sense that I do think that yardage total is something that he can eclipse this year if he stays healthy, obviously, and if the utilization continues the way it looks. So, I mean, again, it's the second practice that we've seen. There's a lot of time still yet to go. But I think the other thing, too, that stuck out to me is the receiver room feels so much better because everyone's been bumped down a spot. You know, like having that guy there that says, hey, you know, Luke, you can be the third wide receiver, or Treylon Burks, you can be the two kind of three kind of hybrid role there. Antonio Williams, you can work from the slot more, as opposed to being like, hey, think about if Terry wasn't here, like Treylon Burks, you got to be the starting X. Antonio Williams, you got to be the starting Z. And the depth chart just gets all pushed up and you're like, man, that doesn't feel very good. But now it just feels right. Kind of pushing those guys down. And again, it just feels a little bit more, more flexible, more diverse, I would say.
Let's go to Chigakonkwo, because if they're going to be an offense that can move the ball effectively through the air, and if they're going to be better than people think in terms of weaponry, Okonkwo is going to be smack dab in the middle of that. And I got to say, just some of the video and things I've seen coming out of practice, the way he moves, the way he runs has me excited. What are you seeing from him?
I think it's the same thing. I think it's just, you know, like when you watch the stuff from Tennessee, it wasn't overly diverse. Like they didn't really use him the way that you'd expect to use an athlete like that. You know, he's a 4-5 guy. He's very explosive, kind of built more like a receiver. And the things that you're seeing in terms of utilization from him here is you're seeing kind of the traditional tight end route tree, and you're seeing it kind of just expand, right? So in Tennessee, it was like, oh, we're going to run a seam, we're going to run a check flat, we're going to run a little option route, whatever, whatever. Now it's like, okay, we can, you know, we see him do kind of run the dig, we run the corner, run the seam, run a post, run a shallow cross, run a deep sit, like all that kind of stuff, like understanding spacings in zones kind of on like a some type of choice type of concept, right? So like I think like there is a really good opportunity for him to kind of take a step forward, and really like that entire room, like, you know, you see some more diverse route usage from Ben. You see Colston Yankoff, man. The suddenness from Colston is really impressive. Like, he's a guy, like we've talked about it before, who was like a converted quarterback, played running back. But I think now every year you're watching him, you're kind of like, he's becoming more and more of a tight end. And the feel, the suddenness, the twitch, the double stick stuff he's got is really, really nice. So that room feels much different than it did last year with the two young guys kind of taking a maturation step. And I love Zach. You're not going to find a bigger fan of Zach than me. But getting Chicken there with that kind of athletic horsepower and a guy that this is an unusual thing to have in an offense, a tight end that can kind of stretch vertically the way Chig can, makes everything feel a little bit different and creates more spacing. I think it's also one of the reasons why the wide receiver depth chart doesn't feel quite as sticky as maybe it felt at the start of OTAs.
What do you mean sticky?
Well, you know, like everyone's like, oh, do you really need a true two? Like, oh, who can this guy be? What's going on? I think after watching, especially the second OTA practice that we were allowed to go to, like, you're like, okay, Chig can do some more stuff here that would offset some of the responsibility of that second wide receiver, which was kind of the plan when they signed him. But to see it kind of starting to come to fruition, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, agreed. Okonkwo, 54, 52, 56 catches the last three seasons, so average 54. And then right around 530, 480, and 560 yards. So he's been right around 500 yards. So it hasn't been huge production. But to your point, I think some of that is usage, and we're going to see if they're right. I mean, when I was on the beat, they signed Pierre Garçon to a ton of money. And everyone said, what in the heck is this contract? But Kyle Shanahan already knew he was going to go out and lead the NFL in catches for him at one point. Like, yeah, they were going to use him better and different and certainly more than the previous team did. And I think that's the plan for Chigakonkwo to an extent as well. So I was having a conversation with someone who covers the team, who's been out at these practices. And this was just within the last 24 or so hours. And they're just not sold on the receiver room at all. And they're like, I don't get it. Like, they could have done more. Why put this much pressure on Jaden Daniels to elevate? Why put this much pressure on the scheme? Because my point is, I think they think the scheme's going to help them. I think they think Okonkwo is a legitimate weapon. I think, you know, they think in 24, you saw it. Like, Daniels doesn't necessarily have to have, you know, three all-pro wide receivers. But their point is they've got the cap space. They had the money. Like, why even put that pressure on the scheme? If the scheme works with, you know, a 60, then it can work better with an 85. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you've said before, and I think it's very astute, they tried to make moves for kind of that big-time wide receiver opposite Terry McLaurin, and they tried to give big money contracts, and it just didn't work out. I will also say this, because I know there's some still guys on the market. I'm sure they're in communication with a lot of them. The thing is, like, when I go to practice, because of the roles, and I think because of the understanding I'm seeing from David Blau and David Rye in terms of how to use the receivers, it makes me less concerned. So, like, when I see Diami out there, he's running routes that he's good at. When I see Traylon out there, he's running routes that he's good at. When I see Antonio Williams out there, he's running routes that he's good at. And you feel the diversity and flexibility that brings to the offense, right? And again, Terry becomes the focal point because those guys are all kind of backup singers to him, you know, like in terms of like role and usage. But if you've got a guy that can do what Terry has done the past couple of days, like, that's okay, right? That works, right? Because if you look, again, I think a good example is if you look at Detroit, like Amon-Ra St. Brown runs all of kind of the route running technical nuance stuff for them. And then they've got like backup singers there that work, right? And they, you know, like Jameson Williams early in his career is just a fast guy. He's developed a lot over the last couple of years. And I think he's got more in the tank than that. But then they had, you know, Khalif Raymond. They had some other guys that kind of were role kind of spot players, but they knew how to use them. And it maximized Amon-Ra St. Brown. It maximized Jared Goff. And it maximized kind of the what the offense was trying to do in creating space. And I think you've got to, and I think that's kind of what it's starting to feel like to me. Now, there's a long way to go in terms of schematic usage, all those types of things. But I think that's where I'm kind of like, they're okay. And if Chig can develop into this kind of third down chain moving player, which he didn't show he could do at Tennessee, but I think he can do. And watching him in practice, I believe he's got the athletic movement competency to get that done. You're going to be okay. Now, Chig's got to develop. Traylon Burks has to develop. Diami has to find the right role. Antonio Williams has to develop as well. So that's why it probably doesn't feel great when you're watching practice. But I do see an understanding by the coaching staff of how to use these guys in what I feel is the correct way. And that is a huge step in the right direction to kind of maximizing a group that doesn't have that true, again, that true two in terms of star power for this offense.
You made a mention of Traylon Burks there. There was a clip that was making its way around the internet of a play he had made in practice. But it was one of these plays that kind of famously when you watch practice in a real game doesn't happen, right? Because there's probably a sack or the play's dead or what have you. I don't really have an issue with that, you know, becoming viral in the sense that two things can be true. All right, the play is dead, but I'm watching the play and I'm still seeing physical gifts and attributes. And I'm still, the point is he can make that play if given the opportunity to in an authentic play later on. Is that kind of how you view that? Because we've seen a few of those this year where, you know, sometimes you'll see, or if you're at a training camp practice, this is a great example. You know, when the fans are out there, it's like a play is beyond dead. There's been three sacks, you know, and then the play will be extended. And then just this long lollipop throw downfield just so some guys can get some sweat going, basically, and everyone will go nuts. Like, how do you view some of that in practice? Like, even if it's an L play for the offense, but Burks makes an awesome play on the back end, I kind of dig it because I'm still hunting traits and he's showing them.
No, I think that's kind of how I look at it too. It's the same way that I looked at it when I was a player, what I look at it like as now as a high school coach. Like, obviously when the play breaks down, like I'm mad at the offensive line, right? And I'm like, this isn't a real play, but it's always great when the quarterback gets out there and layers a ball in over a defender, which Jaden did in this case, over a defender kind of right on the sideline, and Burks is able to kind of tap the toes, get the hands underneath it, and it kind of speaks to that point. It's like, that's an amazing throw by Jaden, even though technically he would have been sacked, quote unquote. And Traylon Burks to kind of have the body awareness, the dexterity, and the competency to make that play on the sideline is great too. Now, I want to see that happen in the rhythm and timing of the play. Like, that would be the perfect case scenario. But in the context of that, I do think it shows a great ball placement, great ball kind of dexterity by Jaden Daniels. And obviously this play by Burks where, again, you're seeing him make more of these plays down the field. And I, you know, like that's a good sign for this offense as well.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, Take Command. All right. Before we move on, I want to ask you one more on offense, and I want to go to Jaden Daniels, because the last time you and I spoke after that first practice you saw, I think you and so many others were super impressed with his ability from under center, the footwork, some of those things that it felt like could take more time. Is it still kind of been 72 and sunny and rainbows for JD? Have you seen anything that needs work? Like, where are we at very early in this process? This is where you would think there would be some things to clean up. Haven't heard any so far.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is just my eye. Like, Jaden Daniels is a beast, obviously, right? Like, you talked about the throw. The throw he just made to Traylon Burks right there. Like, that's an amazing throw, right? There's throws in the first OTA where it's like he's literally – like he's running full speed to his right and just handing the ball to De'Ami Brown. Like, unbelievable. Obviously, there's some stuff where they're doing work and drop back stuff in the last OTA where it's like he's kind of trying to work through the progression, gets a little bit sticky in terms of read, kind of waiting on stuff a little bit too long. And I think that, and again, like, that's not detracting from the really good stuff he does, but I do think you see kind of him working through and the offense working through some of the new, some of the newness, which is what I would expect, right? You're not going to come out there and just let it rip, you know, 100% completion percentage all the time. Like, you're going to have to work through kind of, oh, this route, this timing. Oh, I have to know that's dead right now. I can't wait a little bit longer. I have to get to the shallow cross, or I have to get to the check down. And Jaden Daniels is excellent at that. Like, there was a play earlier in the practice where, again, he worked through the progression, got the ball to the back, and it's just like bang, 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 bang. It's perfect, right? But there's also times where the defense is going to win and he's trying. And I think I've heard him say this before, where he's trying to see what he can get away with in practice. He's trying to push the envelope as far as he can, trying to get in that tight window. And so I think it's good that he's kind of challenging himself in that way. But also, like, you see some of the, so just working through some of the nuance, the timing, the like, and it's not his footwork mechanics. It's just like, when I get to the top of my drop, how much time do I actually have before I need to move on to the next thing? And that's just to my eye. And again, this is the second practice, so we're working on a sample size of maybe, what would you say, Grant? Probably 40 plays, which is not a lot.
Right.
And so, like, you know, like, there's, he's, I'm 100% confident he's fine. That's just an observation I had in terms of something that with a new offense, every quarterback works through, and it's cool to see a young player, I think, handle it with a really good sense of professionalism, you know?
That's why we're here. I mean, this is the whole point of this part of the process here, is to clean things up and to get those reps and to get comfortable in a new offense. But by and large, it's been very, very positive, and I think people are very, very excited about how he appears to fit with David Blau so far. All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball next. This is Take Command.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
After another practice out in Ashburn with the media on site for OTAs, Take Command, looking back at some of Logan's observations. I know you liked what you saw from the pass rush in this workout and in this practice. So before we get into some specific players, what did you see? Were they dialing anything more up? I know last time it was a lot of just like base looks, vanilla stuff. Did they add some wrinkles, or was it still just, hey, let's count on guys to use their athleticism to get home?
I'd say, you know, obviously they're on what, day four or five installs. So there is a little bit more, but it's definitely not, didn't feel like the same type of frenetic, like we're blitzing the freaking hot dog vendor in Minnesota. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't feel like that. It felt much more kind of vanilla, much more kind of, again, there was some more challenging stuff, but nothing too crazy. And the thing that stuck out to me is, like, even in these kind of more quote unquote vanilla looks, traditionally speaking, is you got some more horses now in there, right? You got Adafe Owe, who you start to feel that burst and that length and that power to compress the pocket. Charles Omenihu, right? Again, not the most dexterous kind of pass rusher, but the length to kind of compress and make that pocket just feel like a noose around Jaden Daniels is pretty cool. And it's just cool to see more players, like more guys that you're like, oh, who's that? Oh, like there's that. Like last year it was like Dorrance Armstrong. And then everybody else was kind of a complimentary piece. Obviously, Dietrich Wise is a beast. He's not out there. He's working on the side field right now. But I look at that and I say to myself, like, they've got guys. Caleb Von Chason, like, there was the play where Jaden throws the interception where everybody is within probably a foot and a half of him when he's about to throw the football. Like, that is a good, cohesive, well-coached rush. And you're seeing these guys that have had, you know, double-digit sack seasons starting to express some of that talent in practice, which I think, as we talked about with the turnover thing, is really important, really, really important. So great to see shades of that starting to come through in practice.
Adafe Owe, 4 years, $100 million was the prized possession of free agency for the Commanders. He seems to have really surprised people with the size and the length when you get out there and watch him.
I mean, he just is a big man, you know, like there's a, you know, like I tell the people this all the time, and you've seen this because you've covered NFL football for a long time. When a first round draft pick walks in the door, the good ones look a certain way. Like, he is legit 6'6". He's like 265 pounds. He ran a 4.39 at the combine. He has a 10 RAS. He's got arms that go down to his knees, and that's how he looks and that's how he moves. And so when I see a former first round pick, like, I tell people this all the time, like when I saw Julio Jones for the first time, like, oh yeah, that's what a mutant freak looks like. There's a little bit of that to Owe in terms of how he carries 265 in a very slender cut up type of way. But like in terms of just the frame and the length, you're like, oh yeah, former first round pick for sure.
This is less a practice question. Maybe you get a little bit of this in practice and more, you know, going back to when you and I were talking free agents and you watched all the tape. How diversified is his pass rushing portfolio? Like, how many moves does he have? Is it a lot of like speed to power stuff using that length, or does he actually have a bag to deal with?
I think he's got some bag to him, more so than I thought in Baltimore. Like, for example, I remember going through the cutups and like, obviously the length is something that catches you. Like when he gets that long arm landed in the pocket, and the tackle just withers under that. Right. Or he gets the hand in there. He's able to give a little pull and able to attack the outside hand. Like that push pull is awesome. And then he's got a nice little kind of like approach, little like kind of Euro to a cross chop, which doesn't always play, but when you've got such a good power rush, it plays a little bit better. So he does have some stuff. He had a six spin move against Minnesota, I want to say, their left tackle, like just kind of walked up, hit the spin, and like was in on for a pressure. Like, he's got some stuff to him now. And it's not like, you know, like some of the, who's the guy in Houston? Danelle Hunter. It's not like Danelle Hunter where he's got like literally 27 moves and you're like, where does this guy have time to practice?
Daniel Hunter's the guy. If I could build a, you know, in like a video game where you build a pass rusher, yeah, I would just start with his body, like that length and twitch.
Yeah, and that's what, exactly right. But then he's also cultivated all these kind of funny Danelle Hunter I'm talking about pass rush moves where, like, you know, usually you're rushing the passer, you're trying to work your like Euro step. You start with your outside foot. If you're on the right side as a rusher, you go left foot, then you work the left hand across. Like, he'll start his Euro with his inside foot sometimes. You know what I mean? And so it just, like, he has like an odd rhythm and approach that you can tell kind of befuddles the tackle. So he's, and the reason I bring him up is he's like in his own category, but Adafe Owe, I think, has enough moves to be problematic because of the size, because of the length. And when you talk about building a pass rusher, like, his measurables are very, very similar to Danelle Hunter, quite honestly. And so, like, I think people sleep on how actually freaky Adafe Owe is.
What do you see from Sonny Styles right now? We talked earlier in the pod about him not getting the early opportunity to necessarily work with the ones. And some of that is just, hey, you're the new kid on the block, earn it. What have you written down or observed?
Yeah, I think a lot of this stuff that you're hoping carries over from college is there. And the main thing for me, like when I see linebackers come in the league, like, and I've never seen anybody with Sonny Styles' profile come in the league before, but his ability to fit runs and use his hands is big time. It's big time. Like you see, like he had a rep versus who's the center they drafted from
Golbin.
Yeah, Golbin from Michigan State. Yeah, Golbin. And Golbin gets up there, takes her. Golbin, nice angle, really good angle, really good position. And Sonny just is like, you know, arm extension, pull that thing through. I'm right in there for the tackle and the running. And you see Golbin kind of like, it was a really funny moment because like that place, like that's a good angle, that's good positioning. And he kind of looked like, I had him. Like I was in the right spot. And then when you're dealing with an athlete like Sonny Styles, like you're like, hey, that doesn't work on him. Like I got to try something different. Like it reminds me of like when I had to block DeMarcus Ware, I had to like think of a whole new technique for my man reach just so I could like fit the run. Like when you're dealing with these big, big athletic freaks, you got to kind of get deeper in your bag. So really nice play by Golbin, but like, I think just, it speaks to Sonny Styles ceiling in terms of his ability, to destroy blocks, fit the runs. And I love seeing that from him. Cause like when you watch him cover Grant, like it's, I don't know if it's the frame, but he's able to cover just so much space and get so much depth. So I mean, I think he looks the part, and it just depends on like where his development's at.
Are they going to be able to get all three linebackers on the field at the same time? That's something I keep coming back to.
I hope so, man.
And I think they're going to be their best team when they do that, but I think it's going to be hard to do.
And, you know, like it's one of those things like when you're watching practice, like, and again, it's still like the fourth or fifth install, whatever they're at right now. But you're watching, you're like, man, they could do so much more. And I know it just feels like they're kind of like, oh, the media's here. Let's just show you this thing. And I just, it's hard for me to believe that when you have that kind of talent at the middle level of the defense, you don't have some type of plan to get those guys on the field together. And you could definitely do it. We've seen teams do it. I think that's the thing about Sonny. He can play multiple spots. Frankie, Leo can all play multiple spots. So, you know, like they kind of are in this 3-4 base, and they have not shown any of this in practice, but like I would anticipate just like looking at the body types that there's packages where Leo's playing Will, you know, and Sonny and Frankie are on the interior, or maybe one where Frankie's on an edge and Leo's on an edge, and then Nick Cross is kind of that extra linebacker with Sonny. Like I think there's going to be a lot they can do here, because they, like, you can just tell by the free agency moves and the draft moves, they've brought guys in with flexible, dynamic skill sets, and I think why not use them? And again, you got to see where the defense gets to, where everybody's mental threshold is, but I just see that as something that's going to be a big piece at some point this year.
So Kenneth Gallo hit me up with a question at Grant Paulson on Twitter, at Grant H. Paulson on Instagram. He said, which positions do you guys find easiest to evaluate during OTAs? That is, which position groups can be evaluated at this point in the offseason that can actually be projected on rather than having to wait? I mean, to me, I think running back is the hardest one to evaluate right now. Shanahan always used to say when I covered him, like until preseason games, you really didn't know with running backs because they're not being able to run through legitimate contact or being tackled. So I would put that near the hardest to evaluate end of the spectrum. But what would you say you can actually evaluate pretty easily?
Yeah, who am I to disagree with the great Mike Shanahan? I would probably agree with that too. I think anything that where the physicality is really, really high, it's harder to evaluate. So like O-line can be tough this time of year. Like I said, and that's more like speaking as an offensive player, like OTAs and anytime when you're not in actual football pads, the blocking technique changes a little bit. The angle has to be a little bit tighter. Like the hand placement has to be a little bit different because you don't have those handles of the football pads to control the defender. So running back, I'd say offensive line. I would almost throw defensive line in there, but I think there is something to the athleticism and the movement competency that you want to see. Like we just talked about Adafe Owe. Like if Adafe Owe came out and looked like an athletic turd, I'd be like a little bit worried, but he looks like this lithe, athletic, long guy that can move and run and close lanes and all that kind of stuff. So you're like, okay, good. Is it the same as watching him in training camp practice? No. But does it kind of lay the foundation for what he can be? Absolutely. And so then I think the farther you move out from the ball, like you get to the receivers, you get to the corners, like they're basically like, that's what that game looks like for them, right? They're going to get pressed. They're going to get off coverage. The DBs can play the football. Like it becomes much more real. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've seen receivers, corners get better, is because like you can do 7-on-7 and get a pretty good read on what those guys are doing and the timing of those routes and how the cornerbacks are playing them. And so I do think as you move out, gets a little bit easier to evaluate those guys. Another one that I think is actually pretty good, kind of sneaky good, is quarterback. You can get a pretty good feel for how the quarterback's looking this time of year too.
I was going to say that actually, even though some of the pressures aren't authentic.
Right.
I mean, they're not dialing up some of their zero stuff, I would imagine, right now that they'll be using in September. You're still going to get a feel for timing, being able to layer a football, reading things out. As you said earlier, like, are you seeing it or not? Like, some of those things I think you can tell. Steven sent me this question on IG, again, Grant H. Paulson. He says, hey, Grant, question for you and Logan for the next mailbag. If a defense shows cover zero as a look on first and second down, even if they don't all out blitz, how comfortable can a quarterback be on a play action fake that gets called? You'd have to turn your back to some human missile possibly flying at you. In that scenario, will most quarterbacks audible out of that play?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And we could probably spend a lot of time on this. I'll give you a long answer. We got some time. So what I will say is, like, one of the things you have to do when you're putting in protections versus like the Minnesota Vikings, for example, is you have to have a really good solution for zero. And the thing that they did a good job of, Minnesota does, is like, you're not technically blitzing everybody, right? You're blitzing, like, if you have five offensive linemen, you're blitzing six. The thing they do a good job of is if they're in man coverage and they're like green dogging. So like, for example, I leave the back in and the back's going to block the sixth rusher. The guy that has him in man coverage is going to then also rush. And Minnesota did a great job of understanding kind of the different solutions that teams have versus zero. So with regards to play action, the thing that you're getting is you still, the defender, when they see the action, they're not blitzing. They have to fit the run first, right? And that's the moment where they kind of go, oh, shoot, I got to fit the run. Oh, now it's a pass. So like, if the guy is like, let's say like the tight end stays in to block the run, he can't just green dog right away. He's got to make sure that the ball has been handed off or not handed off. And it does actually provide you like a 1-1000, 2-1000 in some cases where that works out. So a good example of that is if you guys remember the Green Bay game from last year, like they're in like some form of man coverage. It's a six-man pressure. It's not quite zero, but it's man coverage down in the red zone. And they run this kind of little play action boot. And Frankie Louvu triggers on the run. And then they boot outside of him and the tight end's wide open in the flat. Like, there still is a man coverage element to this that needs to be respected. And so in some cases, if you can stay on schedule, those boots, those play actions, those waggles are really, really effective at dealing with zero, because even a waggle where you're changing the launch point, now the rusher is so coached to kind of meet at 7 yards for the quarterback. Now that angle changes, it does buy a little bit more time. Now, to the question, the protection has to be locked in and you have to know the rules versus zero and who's doing what and where the guy's going to be coming from and all that kind of stuff. But it does provide, especially when well executed, in some cases, a reprieve from that kind of torpedo element. And I think when you look at, again, some of the stuff Cliff did last year, they're always in the gun. They're always in a similar backfield set. It just lets that zero pressure just tee off at 1,000 miles an hour because there's no mental indecision. The play action provides some mental indecision to the defense that can ultimately be helpful.
Yeah, and the confidence from the quarterback has to come in knowing they can get it cleaned up and picked up.
Right.
And that's on the quarterback a lot of times, pre-snap too. I mean, how many times do we see, you know, a guy not get the ball out and a free rusher hits him, and on the broadcast, Greg Olsen or whoever is saying, hey, that's his guy. Like,
yeah,
you either need to make sure you get someone in there to pick him up, or you need to beat him by getting the ball out faster.
And I think that's the other thing too, is like, sometimes some protections aren't good versus zero. So it's the quarterback's job to be like, okay, we've presented zero. What are we going to get to? What is my answer versus this? And that's another element to it too. I think it's a great point, Grant. Like, it's not just that play, that protection. It's like, well, like, a great example is like Kyle, for example. Like, we have a bunch of plays up, right? And he's like, this play is terrible if they bring this pressure. So if they bring this pressure, it's the quarterback's job to get us to this other play. And if the quarterback missed it, it was a tackle for loss. But if the quarterback saw it, it'd be an explosive play. And so there is a personal accountability by the quarterback to make sure that we're in a good position to handle some of those zero pressures.
One of the reasons why it's not an easy position to play. All right. Speaking of mailbag questions, we'll have a full mailbag episode coming up to kick off the week the next time you hear from us on Take Command. Big thanks to everybody for checking us out and listening. For Logan, I'm Grant, saying so long.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.